All right, guys, and welcome to the Rondo. Another Sunday, another great week of Premier League football. Well, maybe not so great for me, but great overall. Lots of goals, lots of like really good games, and lots of good individual displays. Before I go into the agenda, it's your boy hosting, as you know, repping this club that I've been a bit meh today. I'm joined by my guy, co-host. Jalen, say something.
We just won.
So I'm saying it started already.
Introduce me, bro.
I said I'm joined by my co-host Jalen, bro.
Yeah, man. It's good to be here. You know what I mean? Yeah. After a solid victory against my rival here, you know, I heard a lot of talk from him recently, and here we are.
Okay, that's enough. All right, and I'm also joined by our guest, Alfonso. It's been a little bit of a while since you've been on the podcast, man. How does it feel to be back?
Yeah. It could have been better, but good to be back.
Okay. All right, without further ado, I'll do an overview of the agenda. So we're going to start off with the Liverpool-Arsenal game, go into a couple of the key talking points from that game. Then we're going to move into our weekly roundup and rondos, going to talk about the fact that, it looks like Chelsea are in crisis. You know, Watkins' terrific performance over the week. Luton and their mad 4-4 draw against Newcastle. Lots of little bits. And then we're going to talk about Spurs versus Aston Villa since Alfonso has joined us. Mm. Who's going to get that top four position? How confident he feels? And then we're going to finish off with AFCON, which has been just AFCON-ing throughout. We're going to talk on, you know, whether Ivory Coast can do one of the greatest recoveries that we've ever seen. And we're going to talk a little bit about players who are stepping up and playing for their country of heritage. So lots to discuss. Let's start off with Liverpool-Arsenal. I guess we may as well start with Jalen. What does this game mean? What does that win mean for Arsenal?
It's difficult, man. I'll be honest with you, because my feelings today aren't... I don't think we have dented you as much as I wanted to, and I think that's partly our fault really, because we didn't capitalize on our dominance in the first half. Obviously we gave you a route back into the game through a very silly goal, and at the end of the game, I mean, we've got the 3 points, but if I'm being honest as an Arsenal fan, do I really feel like it's a big turning point? Not really. I think it's more just a case of like we got a victory that keeps us in the race, basically. Obviously if we lost today, I think that would have been, for me personally, I think that would have been 100% the end of it. Okay. I think right now we're still there with Liverpool and City at the top. But obvious problems for me still remain. And I think after the FA Cup game, you know, when we saw Rice and Jorginho on the pivot, a lot of Arsenal fans thought, you know what, there was something there. Even though we lost the game, there was something new there that he tried. And hopefully going into the second half of the season, you know, that would have been kind of like a foundation to build upon. Mm. We came back from Dubai and Kai Havertz was back in midfield, didn't it? So, I mean, I don't know what to really make of Arsenal right now as a challenger. Obviously, I don't know what you guys think as obviously rivals fans. But today, obviously, we got the result. But I don't know, man. It's still shaky for me, man.
Oh, fair enough. I feel like you played it down a little. I feel like how excited you are in the GC seems different to this. But I do like the fact that you're, you know, kind of being measured in your approach. I wouldn't call it a turning point, but I would still say it's a key victory, which I think it blows the title race wide open. Like it's now, it is, because I feel like Arsenal fans, like you said, if you had lost that, I feel like we would have gone into the mode of more of a two horse race.
And I think,
but now it's definitely three horse race, kind of straight ahead. All teams within what? I mean, if City win their games in hand, which they will, all teams are within 2 to 3 points of each other. The title race is very much on.
It was starting to get to that point where, like, especially after Liverpool beat Chelsea and that big win that you had against Newcastle, I think people were starting to dismiss us a little bit. Yeah. It started to seem like people were saying, you know, is it going to be Liverpool? Is it going to be City? And during the week, I wasn't really hearing people talking about Arsenal in that conversation anymore. So, as I said, I think the victory, it brings us back into that conversation. Obviously, I think it's clear that there's going to be three main teams going for the title, which is obviously good for the league. I think for us, there's positives in the performance. Mm-hmm. But again, as I said, I just think if I look at Liverpool, City and Arsenal right now, I think we're probably the team most likely to have an off day or a day where we don't get a result that we're supposed to get, because we've seen it happen already during the season. I mean, we had that difficult run that we've come through. But a game like today, I mean, I just feel like we played against City and Liverpool at home, yeah? And combined, they've had one shot on target. But we haven't got a dominant result out of it. Like, we can't come here from today and say, yeah, like, we battered Liverpool. You know, we beat them 3-0, 4-0. You know, like, when Liverpool used to, like, blitz City at points, or City used to blitz Liverpool at times. Like, yeah. We don't have the attackers or reliable scorers that give us that opportunity to capitalize on those moments. So, it's disappointing in a way, because it's like, I think you guys conceded the most XG today that you've ever conceded in a Premier League game. And I'm still sitting here thinking, right, like, we needed a Van Dijk mistake to obviously win the game, innit? It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we know that you're not too clinical. So that's always going to be a factor for you, which is the only thing I can say, really. I think it's something that we've repeated, you know. Arsenal don't really have a killer in that front line. I think that will be a big game changer for them.
But pre-game, where were you at with it in terms of, like, going into it?
Going into the game, I mean, I always said I think today was it was a game where if we lost, or even drew, to be honest, I think it just showed that we weren't really serious. I think with the players that Liverpool were missing as well, I know we were missing players, but it just seemed like a really good opportunity for us to get back into the race. Obviously, we've done that now. But, you know, we go away to West Ham next week, and I'm still not sitting here 100% confident that we go in there and get the job done. That's just
So you think you could go to West Ham and lose now?
We could easily go there and not win. Like, because I'm just not convinced that we're in a position where if we're on top, we can capitalize on certain situations. Happened to us too many times where Arteta comes out after the game and he's like, we haven't been good enough in both boxes, bro. I've heard it like 20 times this season.
Being very, very careful today.
It's not even about being careful. I'm a realistic fan. Like, we're talking about winning titles, isn't it? We're not talking about a team being good or 100% compete. We're going to be there. I don't think Liverpool are going to get it done either. I think Man City right now are the favourites.
Yeah,
but
probably.
If we're talking about actually getting over the line,
I'm tired of this Pep guy, man.
We have to improve in the final third.
When are those 115 charges going to come through? 115 charges, bro. Like, Everton are not, and then what? They have like three, and they're getting the points deducted this season. Why can't we get... Surely they can expedite like three of them and just get some points.
We're not going to sit here and discuss this game and not discuss the disaster class from the Liverpool centre-backs today. I wasn't going to bring that up. But I must say, Virgil van Dijk, you gave me life today, buddy. I'm very, very happy with the performance that you put in at the Emirates. Konate, I was waiting for this. Because the way that these Liverpool fans be gassing this guy, he came to our patch, the guy got sent off. Van Dijk at fault for all three goals, even left with an own goal.
All three is harsh, man.
Yeah, all three. The last goal, he didn't engage again.
Cool.
The second goal, Alisson, obviously... No, Alisson.
Second one's like...
He let the ball bounce.
Second's like 70% Alisson.
Yeah, man.
Okay, but he's still there. Maybe. The first goal... No man's land. So at the end of the day,
when he goes forward into the midfield.
No man's land. Absolutely no man's
land.
To
be fair, fair enough, man.
You know what I mean?
And Van Dijk and Konate were shocking today, cuz.
And I'll be honest with you, like, I think if Havertz didn't play up top, I don't know if that would have happened. I'll be honest with you. I think he actually contributed to them just being not necessarily rattled, but I think it gave them more to think about. And I think even if I look at like Saliba and Gabriel, that's why I was kind of happy that Nunes didn't play, in all honesty, because even though he's not a good scorer, same with like Havertz, they ask questions, they're always a threat.
They're physically more able, they
can run in behind, you know, they can
hold the ball up, get some
fouls, the movement is all right, you know what I'm saying, even though they're both really like not really reliable in front of goal. That's the type of striker that's going to cause the top centre half's problems. And it's funny because in the Premier League recently there's been a lack of those players, really, especially at the top end of the table. I mean, Haaland coming back has kind of seen more of a transition towards that, and you look at guys like Hojlund and, you know, other players throughout the league, and the people that the top sides are targeting, that kind of seems the way that they're going. So I'm looking forward to kind of the battles going forward in the bigger games. But you really did see today like what that type of striker can really do for you.
Yeah, not having Nunes as a target, man, hurt us, because you could see, like, I mean, kind of Jota and Gakpo were drifting into that nine position, and both of them were really struggling when we needed an outlet against Saliba and Gabriel's physicality. So
I'm surprised that Gakpo even started over Nunes.
Nunes only didn't start because he had some swelling on his foot from the Chelsea game. So it's just annoying. That's why as well, I didn't feel the most confident for the game, because I felt like going into it, and I'm normally very confident. I had a bit of doubt. I thought, boy, we already don't have Salah, obviously. We've been kind of doing okay. But you think Nunes coming out, I'm thinking, is there going to be much bite to our attack when we're coming against two such good centre-backs? And then obviously Szoboszlai pulls out as well. And, you know, I just haven't really been impressed with Gavin Birch at the top level across his, you know, short Liverpool career. So, you know, when those warning signs were there, I thought it's going to be a bit tough. But I thought we would be a bit better. I thought the first half was poor. Funny enough, the second half was a bit better, but still, you can't really make you can't make those big errors.
Like, how do you now see the title race?
Well, I feel like it's wide open now. But to be honest, I always felt like City were on our shoulder. To be honest, I think if we can go away to the... Sorry, not go away. If we can beat City at home, you know, we can kind of put it back into our favour and go back into the driving seat. Obviously, there was... To be honest, I always felt like there was pressure to do that. Because even if we beat Arsenal away, we'd still have to do that as well. But it would have just... What I wanted us to do was beat Arsenal at the Emirates and beat City at home. And then I was like, boom, we can get that title. But obviously, it's a lot to ask. Yeah, and I always... And you know what? The other thing was playing on my mind. We beat Arsenal at the Emirates in the FA Cup.
I mean, I told you this. It's unlikely. Like, as much as obviously you want to analyse football, I always go with law of averages sometimes. Yeah. Like, realistically, you were never going to beat us twice at the Emirates in the space of a month. It's just very unlikely. So when you man actually
never sounds a bit hard.
That it would never happen. But as of right now, like with the way, obviously we're in a better place than we were a few years ago. I just thought it was very unlikely that would happen. I think worst case scenario today, we were coming away with a draw.
Fair enough. Question to you that I may regret asking. You think that performance from our centre-backs, you know, obviously there's been a lot of heated debate between who's got the better centre-backs, Liverpool or Arsenal. Do you feel like that performance from the Liverpool centre-backs now puts them kind of behind in the pecking order in comparison to the ones that you have?
No, I would have put them behind in the pecking order. I think right now we just got to enjoy four good centre-halves at the top, really. I mean, I'm always going to be biased and put my centre-halves ahead. I think Saliba and Gabriel as a pairing, as I said, are slightly more reliable at times. But I think, you know, the Van Dijk and Konate obviously have their strengths. Today we saw, you know, their obvious weaknesses as well. But yeah, man, like, as I said, I think, you know, Van Dijk and Konate have done a good job considering that McAllister's basically playing in front of them, if we're really being honest about things. I think at the same time, they've had Alisson behind them. He's able to bail them out at times. Yeah, we haven't had that. So if you weigh it up, I mean, they're all in the same kind of category.
Alisson behind them didn't do much today.
Well, I mean, yeah, today, but... throughout the season, I mean, you know the effect that he's kind of had. And
I'll be real honest. Talk about it. Say something about it because say something about it.
About what?
About Alisson.
Oh no, Alisson today was shocking. I mean, I feel like the third goal is somewhat forgivable because of the deflection, but I still feel like he can react to it and him at the top of his game would. But that second goal, like. No, that's straight out of AFCON. Yeah. Like I remember Toby saying in the group chat, like, bro, some of the AFCON keep. I'm African myself, guys. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's not coming from any place of discrimination. But if we're honest, some of the AFCON keepers in those group stages, that's what I'm talking about. That level of calamitous playing, like you could have replaced him with the Ghana number one, and you wouldn't have been able to tell the difference with what he was doing. He just didn't even look at the ball. Just, you know, kind of ran straight past it and kicked into air.
He had a similar like performance at the eight he had as well, where he wasn't like fully up to the race. I remember on the ball he was a bit weak, and then that Akanji goal, I think that got disallowed.
Yeah, he got very lucky that.
So I'm looking at like the two biggest games really that you've had, and he hasn't really been up to the race. It's weird as well because obviously he's by a mile the best keeper.
He normally steps up, but he does have. He has,
when Alisson's bad, he's bad.
It rarely happens. When he's bad,
it's not just one mistake. Yeah, it's just a whole game.
Yeah, he'll give you. He said that's not enough. He's like, that's not enough. I need to decide this.
Like,
game
when
today.
That last goal went in, I was confused. Obviously, I know it got deflected, but I was still like, "Right, did that actually go in from there?"
Yeah, Alisson. It's still his body. He just wasn't really a set. I feel like you were gonna come in there.
No.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, moving on. What was that? What's our loss?
The only thing I want to say about Man City as well is that usually, I know what you said about kind of you wanted to beat them at Anfield, but I think usually the aim is keep City behind you as long as possible and then just try and hold on until the end of the season. But right now, I mean, if you take their two games in hand, I think they win their games in hand.
They're top.
So it's going to be difficult for us to keep.
That's what I was going
to
say.
Like, we kind of have to work together.
Do you guys mind
I need
mind
you man
it?
To beat them, in all honesty.
When would you guys, for you and for you, do you mind coming, like losing to City, there's no shame in that. Yeah. But for you, come behind Arsenal, for you, come behind Liverpool. Is there shame in that for you too? Or do you feel like that's fine?
Coming third. For me, there's no difference between second or third right now. I'll be honest with you. There's no difference.
It's not the biggest deal in the world.
In the grand scheme, obviously it's bragging rights.
If there's a big gap, I would be disappointed.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I want to win the league. So it's like, oh yeah, like, okay, we, you know, even if Arsenal were ahead of us, by never happening, but like, 8, 10 points, I'll still be like, yeah, I mean, that's great. You got second. Yeah, I want the league. It's Klopp's last season. So, yeah, I just want number one. So, yeah. But I think it's gonna be tough.
It's going to be tough, man.
Did you have any other... Because I said you can choose the last sub.
Yeah, the only other thing that I wanted to discuss was... I know I already kind of discussed, obviously, Jorginho and Rice, but...
Oh, Jorginho was obviously good today.
There's been a lot of discussions about, you know, what Arsenal can do about this left side of mid position. Obviously, Havertz being in the midfield. Partey, obviously, his obvious injury. Xhaka's obviously left. I mean, one criticism that I've always had of Arteta is his problem solving within the actual squad hasn't really been up to par. I always feel like there's options there or there's solutions within the squad that he can use or at least experiment with a lot earlier in the season. And we did actually see Jorginho play earlier in the season. And for whatever reason, he obviously went a different way. But I think obviously we're getting to that point in the season where now it's like we've seen Jorginho and Rice play together twice now against Liverpool. And boss the midfield, really. Like, Rice looks really comfortable. I think Jorginho looks really comfortable. And the whole balance of the team just looks great. So, going forward, that's what I would like to see towards the end of the season.
That
I don't want to see
4-2-3-1 thing.
I'd rather see Jorginho and Rice. And I think it's a good base as well for when, let's say, if Partey does come back, I'm not relying on him. But if he does, it's very easy for him to slot into that system. Because right now, I still think we're relying on the same system that we played last season. We're relying on the likes of Gabriel Jesus, he's not always fit to play a very specific style of football. And I think the 4-2-3-1 is a lot easier for other players to come into that aren't necessarily accustomed to that very niche like system. So I really want to see that going forward. And I think, again, it even shows that we're like one elite attacker away from really like dominating certain teams right now. It's very frustrating because we can't blow away teams. But you can see the vision of like if we were to get someone like Osimhen, he can do everything that Havertz can do, but also I expect him to be a lot more clinical in front of goal. And I think we're one
more. You're not convinced.
Than Havertz.
Oh, no. then Havertz, of course.
But
if we talk about him being clinical,
no, but if we're talking,
I don't know.
If we're talking about in terms of like, obviously we're going to get onto Watkins in a second, but if we're talking about in terms of like just everything that a striker is supposed to do, realistically, Osimhen is going to give you, from a defensive point of view, making runs, being a hassle.
He's better than Havertz, isn't he?
And just having clean ball striking. But I haven't seen a striker at my club, have I? For so long.
Yeah.
And I just feel there's a really good
foundation
there.
He has clean ball striking,
but
his shot selection is poor. It's a bit like Nunes, but obviously
better. And I'm going to move on to Chelsea now as well, isn't it? But I think looking at Jorginho today and the level that he's still at when he has the right players around him, I mean...
He's better than Enzo.
I then look at the Chelsea midfield and I just think, imagine they just had... Because the thing about Jorginho is not just good on the ball, it's the calming presence as well, the mentality, the experience, which we don't have throughout the team. And it's something that I wanted from Partey, actually, which is it's one of the main criticisms I have of him, is in the worst moments or, you know, moments where we're going through things, he's one of the oldest players in the team. Like,
are you saying Jorginho is better for you than Partey?
I think it depends on the game, innit? Obviously, as a footballer right now, I think Partey's level is still better. But if we're talking about... If we talk about like the games that Jorginho's had, I know he hasn't played that much, but usually when he comes in, he does his job. Like, I haven't seen many games where he's really been below par, except for that very first game he came on against Everton. I remember Ed, you first bought him, and us, man, were saying, oh my days.
And the Spurs game earlier this season as well.
He made a big mistake.
But
Rice wasn't on the pitch.
So you owe Jorginho a bit of an apology then?
In what sense?
When you came in, you did it.
Yeah,
you didn't
want him to come in.
When he came in, you were on him. So.
I mean, because if I look at Jorginho, I just couldn't.
Analysis, Jalen. You're an apology. You're looking into the sky.
I'm trying to remember what I said, didn't it? But my thing is,
you weren't on his side.
I don't think I wasn't. I don't think many Arsenal fans were.
No, they weren't. Yeah. So I was just saying, do you feel like you and Arsenal fans owe him an apology? He's proven to be a useful member of the squad.
I do.
Okay.
I do still. And I'd like, as I said, I'd like to see him start majority of the games going forward. If Partey's not fit, he has to play.
Nice. Cool. Moving on to weekly roundup and rondos. So starting off with Chelsea. Hey, you man are crap. That's the headline, bro. Eight goals conceded in their last two games, bro. One of the teams they played were Wolves, a mid-table rival.
Let's
more goals conceded than goals scored.
Wolves are decent.
39 goals conceded to 38 goals scored. 11th in the table in the bottom half. $1 billion spent. And these men are rubbish, bro.
I don't understand.
Questions need to be answered. Who are we pointing the finger.
The manager.
Yeah, it's got to go.
The manager.
It's got to go Poch first.
Ah,
it's
a Spurs shame. Fan.
I want to say it has to be. Okay,
you as a Spurs fan. As a Spurs fan, talk to me.
Just, it's got to go Poch first, man.
Oh, okay.
Of course, players to an extent, but at the end of the day, you turn around and say, what's going on here?
Mm.
You're picking the team, you can see what's going wrong, making the same mistakes constantly. It's not like he's been trying to like, yeah, it's on Poch. It's a shame. At the start of the season, when he came in, I was thinking, you know what? He has no European football. He's got a clean slate with his team.
No European football?
Yeah, that's the thing. They're not like playing too many games at all. So I was thinking, clean slate, you're back in the Premier League, you have this kind of tag on your back of being a failure because of your time at Spurs. You come to a club now with unlimited resources and you have a decent core. Of course, it's a bit messy and whatever else, but you have a decent core enough to build something and you're doing this. Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I am shocked. I never thought, 11th, sorry, in February. 11th. It can't be.
But that's the thing. The problem is because they finished so low last season, it's almost like he's just allowed to get away with it now, bro. Because the reality is, there's a lot of Chelsea fans saying, if there was an option that was available, he'd be out. But considering the amount of managers that they've got rid of in the last like few seasons under Bowley, now it's like, what do you do?
Mm.
But if you actually just objectively look at it, bro, he has to go.
Can I talk on this just quickly? Right. In my opinion, yeah, right. So how a couple of months ago, when Chelsea were in 11th or 12th, right, I said the fact that the media is not banging on about this every day. And they came, by the way, they came like 9th last season. Where did they come last season? 10th? No.
I don't know, bro.
They came, I feel like
somewhere,
they came,
somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the middle. I feel like they might have come bottom half, right? And I said the fact that there isn't bigger noise about this is evidence that Chelsea are a small club, bro. And I will go on it about it again. We are in February. Poch is 11th.
I don't know.
And his head's not on a stick. Gary Neville's going to do his podcast and talk more about the Arsenal-Liverpool game.
Guaranteed.
And he's going to talk more about Man United winning. He's gonna do a little 5 minutes on Poch. Chelsea need to do better. They'll get together. But, bro, Poch should be getting heated.
Bro, they don't have a pundit, though. That's like on the level of like a Neville or whatever. You think if Neville supported Chelsea, he wouldn't be...
He'd be gunning.
Yeah, true.
Like a Keane. Like Keane would be gunning for...
Yeah, but even if it was Arsenal, their man would be on them from hater vibes. So that shows their stature of a club. Because they don't... That's what I'm saying. Neville and Carragher, they don't have hate for Chelsea like they do Arsenal.
Let me ask you this, yeah. So, obviously, Arsenal's hate obviously started at a certain time, yeah. But if Chelsea were consistently like this for, let's say, like the next 3-4 years, do you think there'd be a point at which we just completely forget about them, or do we start saying, you know what, this is Chelsea's banter era? Obviously, never went.
No, you're going to be Chelsea's banter era, and you're going to get onto them. I just don't think it will be as much.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I won't forget about them.
They've got too many fans.
You see, if they went like a 4-5-6 year period where they were just completely like
just mid table,
just mid table, like kind of similar to like what Arsenal have had. I know Liverpool had it at a time.
Yeah,
see, United.
But we weren't even this bad. Bottom half, bro.
But again, but even like
bottom half.
Obviously, United had a period where you know they haven't really been at the races either. But if Chelsea were to do that,
yeah.
I think we just forget about them, bro.
You think so?
I think we forget about them. I'll be real with you.
They got too many fans, bro.
They got fans, but bro, we're already kind of talking about them right now. I'm not saying they're Leeds, but it's just I just don't think there's going to be the same that sticking point. I mean, obviously,
no, it's not going to be
the only thing that's keeping them in people's mouths right now. I think is the fact that they're spending money. That's the main thing you can criticize them for. They're messing up the market. They're here buying this player for 100 mil, that player. So yeah, you're going to keep getting onto them, but eventually that's going to get boring.
I just don't get it.
Honestly, the fact that Bowley's been
funds.
So whack.
The funds they spent and the plays they have, I look at the team sheet, I look at the subs, I'm thinking, a billion?
That's why you look at Pochettino.
But even still, even though they've overspent and they've spent stupidly, bro, they've got good players in their team, bro.
That's why it's Poch.
Yeah.
Because it's not like it's terrible players. They have good players there, and they're still underperforming.
See if you're at a big side, you're managing a big side, and you're outside, you know, the top four, top six, they're in 11th place. Yeah. You always look for little things that give you signs of, you know, whether this manager is going to be able to stay here long-term. I look at Pochettino, you look at the style of play, it's not there. Yeah, he's known for his pressing style. I asked the question earlier to a few Chelsea fans. Do you see Chelsea press in a way that looks like it's coached on the pitch? No.
It's quite erratic.
Pre-season, he started with this 4-3-1 formation. It was looking promising. He abandoned it as soon as the season started. Yeah. He started playing guys like Chilwell, left wing. He got rid of, you know, certain players. I don't know whether it was a club decision or whatever. But you look at that, the development of the younger players, It doesn't look like they're in an environment where they're developing. Like, I just look, and even like he put so much.
Improved?
Bro, but he put so much importance.
You missed the biggest point. They've got a 220 million.
No, but we're gonna get onto that. But even but even with the 200 million pound pivot, like to get the most out of them, they still need to be in the right system, regardless of whatever they are.
Yeah.
I say there was a young player, Enzo is a young player. Yeah. They both still have to be under a coach and in a system that is gonna be good. And then my biggest problem right now is the fact that they just went on a run where I think they won like 3 or 4 games in a row for the first time this season or whatever it was. Obviously, they were scoring goals. They got to the cup final. You think they've turned the corner again? Mm. We thought this after like the Man City game earlier this season, but he put so much importance on Nkunku coming back. The guy played. They still lost 4-2 at home, bro.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? So what is it next? What are you going to tell us?
Where's the missing pieces?
What are we waiting for next?
He'd get more of a blight if he's playing bare, like, young players and trying to bed them in, but he's playing, like, the experienced players as well.
That's why I don't understand.
Still messy, bro.
And, like, who's he actually improved as well?
220 million pivot, bro. Enzo and Caicedo coveted across Europe. Why? They haven't controlled the game. Like what game is there that you can tell me of a good level? Don't mention Middlesbrough. Don't mention those Carabao Cup games where Enzo and Caicedo have done what we all thought they would do and bop a game. And they've got so many other players underperforming.
And then they'll talk about
Poch has to be under heat, bro. It's not good enough.
But where do they go next? People say Mourinho.
That's the problem.
People say Mourinho is the only thing.
Oh, no.
They said he started this under Abramovich. Let him just start.
I'm not saying that. I know better. Realistically, we saw a few years ago, obviously, Lampard was obviously in charge of this Chelsea side, and they were.
They got even worse.
No, but it was first time. No, but what I'm saying, the first time, they replaced him with a really experienced manager in Tuchel. He had a bit more to him at that time.
Yeah.
And he transformed them into Champions League winners in a space of 6 months. So I think right now, if you look at the state of that Chelsea side, their young team, there's no stability there. You can't have instability throughout the whole, like, from the players at the bottom. You can't have a young group of players, a manager that is out of sorts, and then a board that is still a mess.
There has
to be stability at some point. And so, I don't think Pochettino is the guy to bring that stability.
No, realistically,
if they're not going to get experienced players and they're not going to have experienced guys at the top, the guy in the middle has to be someone that's going to bring stability.
But who would you get then?
So when you talk about someone like Mourinho, I don't think he's in a position where he could stay there for, you know, like a season, 2 seasons and build. But if you want to bring someone in for 6 months, that's going to be better than having Pochettino there.
No, but do you know why though? His football's outdated.
But my question to you is it better to bring in someone like that for 6 months? And then obviously in the summer, you look at it again, wait till someone comes in and, you know, the right appointment comes. Or do you keep Pochettino there and it gets worse?
I think bring Flick in. Bring Hansi Flick.
Long term?
Got to give it a go. He's the best manager on the market. Plays good football.
But that's what I'm saying. They need a good, high energy, a top tier manager, bro. That's the only person.
Yeah, obviously, I feel like Flick still doesn't have enough. They need a real well-oiled, coached, cultured manager.
And whoever comes in has to do it straight away as well. That's the thing.
Yeah, they need a manager that's got that pedigree, that knows exactly what he wants to do to guide those young players.
And even guide the board.
But there's not one on the market.
At
so
least
I feel
that
like
style, man. Please. I just wanna watch, like, even with Spurs, like, even if you man were in 10th place, I know how you play.
That's enough
for me to say, right, cool, you know what, Ange, fair enough. We're gonna give you a bit of time. The football's nice on certain days, but on other days it doesn't work. With Poch, you can't even say that. I don't get it.
Is there no silver lining so far in Poch's reign at Chelsea?
No.
Palmer plays well.
So?
But I feel like Palmer's kind of doing his own thing.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it's
despite of Poch.
Has he fixed the goals problem?
No, they still leak goals.
No. I'm talking about scoring goals. Because we know with Chelsea,
they create more
chances. Cole Palmer just touched 10 goals, yeah? And I don't think they've had someone that's touched that for a long
time. Yeah, they
create
more chances. Obviously, they don't have a finisher. I don't think that's his point. But there's so many. I was giving Poch a lot of the benefit of the doubt when Chelsea were creating a lot of chances. And I was like, bro, give this guy a finisher because, you know, he's putting the team in a position to create a lot of chances. But when you actually watch them, right, they're messy. Like, there's
dysfunction.
It's very dysfunctional. It's very messy. They don't control games a lot. It's very easy to tip the game into your favour, even if you're a mid-table side, like we saw with Wolves. Like, Wolves are decent, but bro, it's not the first time. Brentford have done it. So many teams have done it. So that's where, for me, you got to look at his coaching. It's not good enough.
Obviously, my final point on Chelsea is just like, even when you look at the other Chelsea guys I've obviously left, I'm not saying that, you know, Jorginho has been the best player ever. Kovacic has obviously gone Man City and he's done a decent job there. But these players individually are good players, bro. Do you get it? They're just, if you're not in the right, you know, environment, clearly there's something wrong at Chelsea. It's not just, we can't continuously just keep blaming the players, all right? Especially the younger guys. The more experienced guys couldn't even ball there. Do Do you get what I'm saying?
So yeah, the environment's awful.
Where are you going to... What can they even... Do you know what? Forget about it. I just think, bring Abramovich back. Worst case scenario, because I actually want to see...
Probably bringing Abramovich back is probably what they need to do. Okay, cool. Let's move on. All right, Watkins. Watkins is next on the list. Anybody got anything to say about Watkins? I've got a Rondo cooking, but you guys do your thing.
I think he's the first player in the league this season to touch 10 goals and 10 assists. And as a striker...
That's very complete
player. He's leading the line for Villa. Very admirably. And as a fan of Arsenal right now, who are lacking, you know, a striker or someone with a killer instinct, he's a player that I look at and I say, you know, if he was in our side...
He makes a lot of sense for you guys,
no? We do all right. Because you look at everything you want from a striker in this era. We were just talking about, obviously, what Nunes and strikers of that mold kind of give you. But Watkins has the finishing, in my opinion. I think it gets overlooked sometimes. If he was from a different country and hadn't come up in this league, and he came to this league and was doing what he's doing... We'd be saying this guy deserves a top six move, or he would be looked at the way that we're looking at Ivan Toney for 100 mil. We'd be looking at Watkins the same way, and striking off both feet, running in behind, the work rate, the hold up play. You look at everything that you need from a striker. He's a very complete player, very good with his feet. So he 100%. Needs to be up there in conversations now. When it comes to summertime and clubs are shopping around for a top striker, I think 100% he has to be there.
Yeah, I think he should definitely be up there. Obviously, we're talking about Watkins because of Villa's 5-0 win against Sheffield, where I thought he was excellent. And yeah, man, it's a little bit of a potential Rondo, but in my opinion, I feel like Watkins... So obviously, right now on the market, there's quite a few clubs that need a striker, namely in the Premier League, out of the big ones, Arsenal and Chelsea. And the two names that they've been looking at are Toney and Osimhen. I think Watkins is a better striker than both of them. That's it. That's the word. Is that Rondo worthy, or is that something that we're hearing?
No, that can fly still. Yeah. I think... Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like...
I think he's more complete than both of them. Because if you look at Toney's very... He's got good build-up play. He's quite complete, you would say. He appears to be quite complete. But then the thing is with Toney is he's quite static. He's very static. I don't think like in behind he's the best. He doesn't press as much as other nines. And I don't know if he would actually get a lot of goals in open play at a top club. Looking at Osimhen, he is like, he's got that energy, that movement. He's going to get a lot of chances. But then in terms of his build-up play and that finesse to his technical ability, he ain't really got it. I feel like Watkins has got a bit of both about him. He's got finishing. He's got build up. He presses. He's got energy. He's going to get a lot of chances. As a striker, he's the most complete out of all three of them.
Talk about Watkins and Toney.
Watkins, Toney and Osimhen.
I think, as I said, if Watkins was doing this in Serie A, we'd be looking at him the way that we're looking at Osimhen.
There you go.
I think if we look at, you know, the only thing really that's separating them is the fact that Osimhen's had, you know, Champions League experience. We're going to see how he does in the knockouts, you know. I think they're playing Barcelona, right? So obviously that's a good tie for him to really like either announce himself, or people could go the complete opposite way and say, you know, we don't want it. Watkins is always going to have that question of, you know, when he's in a bigger pressure, when he's in a more pressure environment or higher pressure environment, how is he going to get on? How's he going to do against, let's say if we go away to the Bernabeu, how's he going to do? Do you know what I mean? That's the question mark, isn't it? Because when I've seen him play for like England, I know it's not the Champions League, but that's kind of like another level that you could look at and say, right, how does he do away from club football? He hasn't really done too much in those games.
But he doesn't get a lot of chances, though.
He started a few games recently. Yeah, I've watched him, and he hasn't really done too much, which is surprising, because when you actually break it down, I mean, my biggest problem with Ivan Toney out of the three is he just doesn't have that mobility that the other two have.
Yeah, that's what I was just saying.
He doesn't ask enough questions of the defenders, and actually his movement in the box really doesn't. He's not going to propel him into that elite category, because he's not the best finisher. Let's be honest, his finishing is pretty average in my opinion.
It's calm. Average is pretty average to me.
Out of the three, who would you say is the worst finisher?
They're so weird because I think Watkins is
the best finisher.
He's the best finisher, yeah.
Of both feet.
Yeah, but I feel like Osimhen and Toney is weird because Tony's got a lot more better composure and shot selection. But Osimhen is actually a better ball striker.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree.
It's tough between those two.
If you actually watch Toney, like especially recently, and it's even reinforced in my head because it's something that I thought before, but he's not as clinical as people think. And I think because he's had time away now where we haven't been able to watch him, people are allowed to say stuff and you're not really going to get challenged because you can't see it.
Now
he's actually come back. A lot of the things that people might have been saying before, they're not correct. That's the fact. He doesn't run in behind. He's not going to be able to press. Yes, he's a bit of a unit, but to be honest, the other two can also give you.
Yeah, they also got a good level. You know, he's with Tony. He's been away for a long time, so you fall in love with an idea of
it's
him,
the idea of
which isn't actually the case now that you're seeing him come back.
It's almost like too harshly as well. Just like two games back.
No, but you know, it's not even just
like a who.
Sorry,
you gotta think about it.
I said, you know, like you have a babe that you ain't spoken to from time.
But even if you think of like what the top clubs want from their strikers, like a lot of the top clubs recently more have been obviously going with this F9 thing or whatever and kind of like full strikers. Yeah, so you're gonna want more what Tony can do in terms of like his playmaking, obviously his ability on the ball. But I'm past that now with strikers, bro. I just want my striker to score, bro. I want him to do the things.
Because you're an Arsenal fan, bro.
No, but it's not just because I'm an Arsenal fan. I just think in general that's where football is going again, and I'm happy we're going back there. So if you're asking for those things, you're not gonna want a Tony. But if you want someone that's gonna, you know, drop in and do the playmaking, you've got two goal scoring wingers, then Tony's probably the best bet.
But I also think that the gap between them, those three strikers, is like not that massive, but just like playmaking. There's a big gap between Tony and the other two.
But do you think it's a thing where I think Watkins and Osimhen, like if you go for like one of the two, you could pretty much, you know, either there's not going to be a big difference between the two. I think if you go for Tony, it has to be very like specific to your style, because you're not going to be able to do the things that we're talking about. You can't play direct balls in behind. You can't press the same way with him. The other two, you can do that.
Even age wise, Osimhen's like 3 years younger than both of them as well.
Yeah.
He's kind of Watkins.
He's like 28.
28.
This guy's in his prime, man. Boy.
Yeah.
He's getting
Bushman still might have another level to go up.
So if someone comes in for him, you're Watkins, you're 28 years old, do you leave Villa?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, why wouldn't you? You could take it. That's his
right
last chance.
I see Villa, because where Villa are right now.
That's his last chance.
Like, I feel like a lot of their players in demand.
Definitely should.
But they're charging really high prices for it. Like, you look at someone like Douglas Luiz, realistically, he could have got a top six move, but he's probably going to get priced out of one now. We saw it happen with Paulinho. He's going to end up probably staying at Fulham now. He's missed out on his move.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Villa is they've got money, so
that's the
if you're going to take their players, you're going to have to pay a lot unless they get into some FFP issues.
So what's the
issues,
max that you pay for Watkins then?
Oh, I don't think you should pay more than 70 mil for Watkins. He's 28. Yeah. He's a striker. You're not going
to... Ready made, to be honest.
Yeah, he's a ready made. He's a ready made English striker, international as well. You're not going to really pick up a striker for, you know what I mean, kind of less than that. I don't think if Tony's going, I think Tony will go for about 70 mil, maybe six. Well, Tony's last year of his contract, so he might go for a young 60. If Watkins is under contract, as I said, I do think he's slightly better. I think he's worth 70. Cool. Moving on, Luton. 4-4 with Newcastle. One of the best games this weekend was absolutely crazy, man. They were obviously 4-2 up at one stage, but Newcastle did work it back. A mad game with, you know, kind of another Barkley masterclass, another goal from Adebayo, some good goals from Newcastle as well. What's our thoughts on Luton? Kind of them coming to the league. I feel like they've been a great addition to the league and they've been giving us a lot of good games. But what's our thoughts generally? Anyone want to come in?
A lot of people thought they'd just be one of those up and down teams, come up,
get
pummeled, sent back down. And like the first few months it looked like that. But
I feel like there was a turning point.
There was a time where they was getting the slack.
They were getting battered, at the start of the season. I think they drew against you guys at home. I think that was a turning point for them. Obviously, then they had the game against us. They had the close game against City. And it was the game when I tuned in against Chelsea and they just, bro, they battered them. And I know Chelsea ended up winning the game, but the way they were going at them, it was just so direct. The crossing from the left-hand side, I can't remember my man's name.
Don't
you? Yeah, he plays like, kind of plays like a Stuart Downing, but just mad direct, whips it in.
Yeah.
And obviously Adebayo is a threat, you know what I mean? So, I mean, as a side, I mean, when you've got someone like Ross Barkley who has undeniable talent, if he gets into a groove, I mean, you're always going to have a chance to pick up points against the mid-table sides. And it's a testament to the Premier League that they have those quality players there.
Yeah, 100%, man. I feel like their story is great, man. Because like you guys said, I feel like first couple of games, I thought they were finished. I thought they were going to be like literally one of the worst sides to come up. You know, I'm talking Derby County tactics. Thanks. You know what I'm saying? Like barely 13 points over the season. And you know, credit to the manager as well for him to like change it and say, you know what? We're going to give it a go. We're not going to bother being like really pragmatic and difficult to beat. And they've been, honestly, like they've been one of the best additions to the Premier League, in my opinion, in the last few years. Like some of the games they've been giving us, like you said, with the Chelsea game, I thought they were great against Arsenal as well. Really gave it a go. They pummeled Brighton the other day, like 4-1. And that 4-4 against Newcastle was crazy,
bro. Though, the best thing about the Newcastle game is that it came away from home. Because I think the easy excuse to use is always, you know, Premier League clubs going to that small ground. It's a smaller pitch over there. Mm. Obviously, they're going to be strong at home. But the fact that they could reproduce that away from home now against Newcastle has put them probably in a good space you know, for the rest of the season.
Yeah, great watch, man.
They and got... they're where? They're in 17th place now, I think.
Yeah, 17th place. I hope they do stay up.
Do you think they're going to stay up?
Probably with the points deductions, they will. So, you know, Forest and Everton have ones incoming this season. So yeah.
Sheffield are going to be gone.
Well, 6-10. Sheffield are gone. Burnley are gone. Bad, yeah. So I feel like one of Everton and Nottingham Forest are likely to go down. So
what do you think of the striker?
Adebayo. I think he's doing the job. I did a TikTok on him the other day, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't feel like he's the most able player, but he's, you know, he knows what he's good at. You know, he's got like a little decent movement as well. And you know, he's got that hunger for goals. Like I said, he's got more goals.
He used to be a centre-half.
Really?
He used to be a centre-half still. When we were 15, 16, he was a centre-back.
He used to play with him?
Yeah, but he was a striker. He was a striker before that, but then he turned into a centre-half for like 3-4 years. I don't know when he went back to being a striker, but now he's playing in the Premier League. It's
Is he Nigerian, though?
And I'm here.
Yeah, he's Nigerian. Proper Nigerian. You seen his name?
Yeah, yeah. But so why is
it's a paragraph.
Yeah, he's Nigerian.
Who's he play for? What's his country like? Why isn't that AFCON? Why didn't you go AFCON?
Oh no, he's English born. He's playing up with him at Fulham.
Oh okay.
I'm sat here talking about football.
And he's playing in the Prem. getting hat tricks. No, bro.
Pick up my guys, man. Aberry as well. There's a couple guys there.
Yeah, fair enough. He's doing his thing. So he was a centre half when you were playing with him.
As a centre back, still.
Did you see that striker element to him? Or
the thing is, obviously, it's not that I didn't see it, but it's more like before I got there when I was 14. But the years before that, he was a striker, so I don't know why he got moved from there back to centre half. But he always used to complain, didn't it? You could see that he always wanted to go back to playing up top, because the strikers that we had at the time weren't like the best. You can see, you know, when you're centre half, sometimes like I used to get when I played for school.
Strikers
aren't scoring more time. I just want to go there and do it myself. Mm. He kind of had that about him, innit? But yeah, watching him play now and I'm badding up the league, I'll be real, it's kind of crazy stuff.
Yeah, it must be crazy players. Oh, that's mad, actually.
It's crazy still, but
what a story, man. From Fulham under 15s at centre-back, man's up top with Luton.
Yeah, but backing it's come in, through the league still. I think he was. I saw a tweet the other day, like he went through, I think he was in the National League like 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, swear.
Yeah, and then he's worked his way through the league still.
Oh, that's it. Even adding better to the story.
Yeah.
So he kind of...
But like, if Luton were to go down, do you think there's a Premier League team that should take a chance and, you know, bring him back?
I mean, if he keeps on scoring, they probably will.
Depending on how he finishes on.
Like I said, he's got more goals than like half the top six. Half the top six strikers. He's got more goals than Hoyland.
The Premier League's a funny.
He's got more goals than Jesus. He's got like double the goals Jesus.
How many goals
has
he got?
He's got nine. He's got more goals than Nunes. He's got more goals than Jackson.
Him and Solanke being at the top.
Elijah Adebayo.
You can never predict that him, like Watkins, Solanke, all of these guys would be close to like where Haaland is right now. It's mad.
No, he's doing well. And then you got like Barkley. Like I said, these guys, when I said Barkley's the best midfielder in the league, everybody called me crazy. Bro, he's been one of the best midfielders in the league, bro. He's defo top three, top five,
top
in and around
harsh.
There.
Top three like, is harsh, but...
If you're talking about like
do you
across
think, do you
the
think
season.
Barkley could play at a top side right now?
Yes.
And just slot in there seamlessly? Or do you just think it's a thing where he just stands out bears because he's at Luton?
Of course he stands out bears because he's at Luton. I don't know if he would start
for a
top side.
So would he be like
side.
A game breaker at a top side, basically?
No, he wouldn't be, no.
So what type of role do you think he could play in that side?
He could be a game breaker, but I don't know if he would be one. But I feel like he'd definitely be a good addition to the squad. He's got good qualities.
Fair enough.
Glass plus players, like they're not there. He's got good end product
like
as well.
He's lost that physicality.
Physicality is still there as well. Take him to England, man. Hey, Gareth Southgate, let me chat to you, man. I saw you. You know Gareth Southgate was in Amsterdam watching Henderson the other day. Now, listen, I've got love for Henderson, yeah? But Henderson is well past it. Phillips ain't starting over Susek at West Ham. Broski, take Barkley, take Eze, take Jones for that third eight position.
Ruben Loftus-Cheek as well. I'd rather have him.
Yeah, man, even take
him. In transition, in the CL, you need to see what Mama's doing.
Even take him, man. If I see Henderson and Phillips, man, unless Phillips does a lot better than he currently is at West Ham, but he's obviously just
I'd still rather take Maney.
But honestly, man,
He's got so much selection, really. You see the midfield thing, yeah? England have options, bro. So if he continues taking Phillips, you made another mistake for a goal today, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he takes Henderson. That's a vile.
That just
tells me he's unserious.
It tells me that he's just biased.
It's not based on merit.
He's just completely biased. But no, bro,
can never be.
You just got some feelings for Phillips and Henderson, man. I don't know what's going on there. But do you want to quickly talk on Maynard? Obviously, he scored. Yeah, mainly, he scored that.
Mainly scored a goal, yeah, or he had a moment. Which tell us, I said to you, man, I've been dreaming about that moment in my living room, and I'm sure many men have for a long time. when you're playing with, you know, the small little footballs, the little small ones, and you're kicking it around to the sofa
from the goal's part.
Yeah, the sofa.
in the
sofa's the goal, and you're doing your own commentary, and you're running through in your living room, and you score a goal, yeah, in the last minute. That is the moment, man. Yeah. Had it in real life. And then not only that, but then after that, he done the calm down. I'm here now.
No, you know what I mean? Mainly, I
hate rival players, yeah, but you see with him, I said before, the same thing I said with Saliba. I just think sometimes you see a player and it's just so obvious that they're destined for the top. He's one of those guys. And I think the only thing that can hold him back is United just going completely like left. But I think with him in the side, they're only going to go up.
Yeah, that last crunch winner for Man United
was a ridiculous goal.
It was a ridiculous goal, what? Man.
That was a ridiculous
even like
goal.
Out of context, it's mad. But like with the context of a game, like last minutes to win the game, bro. That's big. That's kahuna.
18
to do that.
18, yes, bro. Yeah, and the goal, it was a mad goal.
The only thing
bro.
That's gonna hold
you
back.
He glided past three players.
That Manchester Sorry. Accent. Yeah, it's not really hitting, man. That what? It can't be a superstar.
The Mancunian
with that.
Accent.
Yeah, he can't
it's
be a superstar.
Really...
With that, man. Why? I saw him do an interview the other day, and it just so I don't know, man.
Nah, but you guys are Manchester.
To hear a black guy talk like that is bad, you know.
Hey, this guy.
What, man, don't understand that. Bro, I was this listening to him speak, you know, because you know you're just expecting like a guy from Enster, but he plays like a guy from like South London.
I can't lie, though, yeah.
So when I heard the interview, I was like, oh my day, he's actually from Manchester. I can't lie, I lost a couple points.
He's got the geezery Manchester accent.
Like, see
as well.
You see that how we back Sancho here? Yeah? Because he's from Enns.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's made it out. Like, if Mainu was that, bro, this guy, I might be top off. With his name. I'm sure. The guy's crazy.
Yeah, United top with his
the
name.
The guy's cold.
He's cold, man. I can't lie, Mainu, I'm invested. 18 years of age, and he plays like such a baller, bro. He plays with such sauce. Like, He plays like Thiago, bro.
Yeah, he does.
He actually plays it with the little feints.
But he
the
even looks like
passes.
he has more of a defensive mind though.
That's yeah, more yeah. physical. As a
this is a baller.
If
man.
He's coached properly in that United system.
Well, unfortunately he's under Ten Hag.
Yeah, he probably won't be, but if he's coached properly in that, as a six, the qualities that he has, he should be playing for like Barcelona. I didn't know England could create players like that.
Mainly should play for Barcelona.
Well, you wouldn't want him with the way Barcelona are, but he's a Barcelona player.
Do you think?
Don't you think so?
I've got a question
for you. Those caliber teams,
yeah.
I've got a question for you. Do you think Mainu right now is better than what Lavia was for Southampton? I know we ain't seen much, but Lavia was around the same age during that season.
Around the same, I would say. Around the same. But obviously, Mainu is there's added pressure. I feel like you got to remember Lavia, he was doing his thing, but he was able to go under the radar for quite a while. And then people were like, wow, this 18-year-old's been playing like really well for quite a while. When you're playing for Man United, the spotlight is on you. If he makes an error, you know, it's...
And then the team that's out of sorts as well. I think that's the main thing. When you can tell if a player is either destined for it or he's not, is the way that they respond to certain things like that. And you could just tell his mentality. And like the way that he even performed, I remember when they had a game against Galatasaray away, which is a mad hostile environment, high-pressure game. And he came on and he cruised through it. You know what I mean? The guy's 18.
Bro, he's a 150 million talent, man.
And you just think, England's midfield.
I don't care. He's a 150 million talent, bro. 18, he's cold.
Mainly is 150 mil?
Yes. He's a 150 mil talent, bro.
Okay,
all right. Next segment.
I'm going that for 50 mil talent,
bro.
But what I will say is that, obviously...
Actually, 150 is quite a lot. 100 mil talent.
If I look at...
100, let me say 100. He's 100 mil talent. He's 100 mil talent.
Small sample size. Small sample size, but he's...
I think if England have... You know, Rice, Mainu, and Bellingham, you look at the mentality of those three and just the quality, the balance between them, that's unreal.
That's unreal, bro. That's
unreal.
That's England sorted
that's
for
with
a generation.
Depth as well. We
that's
have
England sorted for a generation.
That.
The fact that for the next tournament, that's probably going to be the midfield. I feel like we should try.
You know, Southgate will do some foolishness, bro. There's no way you'll see that three together, I promise you. It's impossible.
You actually make a good point, you know.
It's impossible, bro. Yeah. I didn't even see Foden in there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, man. Just be serious now.
Yeah. Cool, man. Do you have anything else on the weekly roundup? If anyone's got any rondos, speak now. Forever hold your peace.
Nah, not really.
I want to speak about somebody quickly. Someone needs a bit of praise.
Okay.
Someone who goes by the name of
R9. We're gonna get on to
someone needs a bit of praise. Because
stop calling him that. But
yeah. He's Richard. He should be Richard, but yeah, he has stepped up. Last season, people were gunning him.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, zero goals in league. Da, 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 da. We can see the team was dysfunctional. Conte was doing all sorts. He needed to have surgery as well. He was out of it. Mm. This season, he's come under a new manager. Kane's gone. Big boots to fill. Stepped up. stepped up massively. No, of course not. No one can. But as in Kane's gone, we needed someone to get the goals now.
Yeah.
He stepped up. Son's gone. Son said to him, like, while I'm going to step up, he's done it.
Yeah.
Nine goals in eight. Like, Richarlison's come and done his thing. Sometimes with players, you just need patience. Yeah, it's not everyone's going to come in 7 months. I remember Ishmael, Amanda talking to the chat, Rare to tell Corey talking.
But the thing is, like, I said this about Hojlund earlier. Yeah.
Bring the mic a little closer to you.
I said something about Hojlund earlier, but I just think, like, if you're a rival fan and you see a 60 mil sign or 70 mil sign and go a couple months without scoring, I don't care about what my opinion is of that player because I like Hojlund and I've actually vouched for Richarlison in the past. I'm going to get onto them, bro. If you're not scoring goals. If we actually talk about Richarlison, we have a completely, like, non-agenda conversation now. I think at Everton, you saw the kind of quality that he had when he was
even
up
at Watford
top.
As well.
Obviously, Brazil as well. He's led the line well for them. You can see kind of see why he's chosen over Jesus at times. And that hurts to say as an Arsenal fan, but it's the truth.
Is that what you're saying?
I've said this before.
That's clear,
man.
It's clear.
Do you think Richarlison's better than Jesus?
I'd rather have Richarlison. If I could get the best version of Richarlison and the best version of Jesus as a striker,
you're getting everything from Richarlison. He's giving you everything.
I'd rather have Richarlison.
He's a nightmare.
If I get the best version of if I get the best version of both, because as I said, it depends what you want from your striker, bro. If you want if you want goals and you want the things that, like, running in behind, you want the mentality that Richarlison has as well. You know, they're just the dog. You're gonna get that from both of them, but you're gonna get more goals from one than the other, bro. That's the real. And I'm tired of this non-goals thing that he's just doing. I have time for that no more. So,
Richarlison,
good player, man. I'll be real with you, like, he's a good player, man.
He's a good little player, man. Must be good for him as well.
What do you do when Son comes back though? Because I think Richarlison was playing on the left originally, innit? And Son was up top. So did you now put Son on the left?
No, it'll stay. I think it's about Werner. It's about Werner now. Werner will probably come out and have Son. Yeah, it'll be Son back left, Richarlison through the middle, and then maybe Kulusevski on the right. So
I was just checking as well. Yeah, he's got more goals, isn't it, than Wilson and Antonio
combined.
Yeah, and they were giving them a tough time.
They were talking on their podcast. Where's Antonio been this season? Who's seen Antonio this season? Have you seen him?
Antonio's not me.
Bowen's up top now.
No, Bowen plays up top. Right, look at you. Do you like the sight of that?
Yeah, of course, you feel like they spoke
a little bit too much?
No, thing is, I get it. Like, I think it's good for the sport when you have players like that who can kind of talk that freely. Like, even in basketball, you have it when players will kind of talk their crap. So I wasn't against Antonio Wilson saying what they said. Like, they got at him and, you know what, he weren't scoring goals, so fair enough. But now... Now it's time to say, you know what? We spoke and he's proven us wrong. Cool.
Obviously,
but I'm not against him. Like, bro, he weren't scoring goals, so call him out about it. But now he stepped up, so.
Yeah.
It's a good time to move on to Spurs. Obviously, you guys kind of drew that game at the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a wider conversation about who you think is going to, you know, finish in the top four. But what's your thoughts so far where you are? I know I've asked you this before and you always come on here. You're a bit cautious. Obviously, we're getting to the point where there's like 15 games left of the season. Table starting to take some shape. We know who's going to be fighting for what. What's the situation now with Spurs?
Yeah, I think in my heart of hearts, I'd be upset if we don't get a CL spot.
Oh, we got there,
fans. That's where I'm at.
Got a shout from Alphonse.
That's where I'm at the moment because, of course, like, early in the season, it could have been a purple patch revenge. Like, we went through like a 10-game spell without losing. We're doing really well. Mm. But in seeing how we've dealt with, like, Maddison being out, Van der Ven being out, Son being away, Romero being suspended, Bissouma being out, like, all of these things have happened and are still showing the personality and performance that we have, I have to say that with this team now, it's got to be a push for CL, especially with the fifth place being an option as well for CL football.
Potentially
being an option for us. We've got to push for CL football. I think Villa are a top side and we're doing really well. But regardless,
I was going to say that next year, because my thing is, like, I think if you looked at it and you missed out on CL to more of like a heavy hitting team, let's say like a United or whoever it is, then potentially you're gonna feel a bit more okay about that. But I think now, if Villa were to finish ahead of you and get that spot, I think it leaves you guys in a worse position just because of who you've actually missed out to. Because I don't think Villa are a better side than you
in
guys.
A worse position compared to
and you're a bigger club than them, innit?
Compared to when?
Yeah, you're a bigger club. Villa aren't too far off though.
You think Spurs realistically they're in the big six?
Yeah, they are.
If you miss out to Villa, I think you're going to look at the season differently compared to, like, if you were to miss out to, like, a United.
It's a failure for Ange if he doesn't get top four, I would say, in the position that he's in now and what we now expect of him. Because I now see Ange as... But when Ange first came in, I didn't know anything about him, to be honest. I don't watch SPL. But I would say so because I rate him now. I think he's a good manager. I think he's instilled a style of play quickly. And I know you don't rate him, but I rate him.
I rate him. It's not that I don't rate him.
Okay. But let me just finish. Let me give this guy some props, man. So I think he's a good manager. I think he's a top quality manager. Mm. I think he's instilled a good style of play, which is something like you're not gonna question him going forward if he doesn't get top four, because I think the Spurs have a way of playing. They have something they can hold on to, which is not like other managers that we've spoken about previously on this podcast. But I feel like where you are right now in terms of where you should be seeing Ange and what he's done going forward, you should be getting top four. Like, otherwise, he's not really what I think Spurs fans and what some of us who are fans of him from a footballing perspective is. He's a bit off that. Maybe you can get there, but that's what I would say.
Yeah, I think if we don't get top four, it's disappointment. I wouldn't say it's a failure. Because start of the season, failure is a harsh word. But I think for sure, where we're at now, what we've seen from the team and what we've seen from Ange as well, not getting top four, we'll end of the season and be like, at the start of the season, like not having Kane here, he's thinking, people saying about, oh, you might not get top 10 or whatever. But now having seen where Spurs are at, it's got to be a top four push.
Just quickly, though, I just want to ask a question. Did you want to say something on that topic?
Obviously, the January transfer window has been really quiet, but Spurs have actually done business.
Yeah, so and straight away. Werner, early.
That centre-back came in who wants to go to Real Madrid. You know, obviously, came on the other day. And I'd struggled against Beto, by the way. But...
You're a bad guy.
No, get to the point, man.
No, I'm saying. But...
Some random tangent.
I'm not shocking. I said, nah, there's no way Everton are coming back. Then my man came on. What's his name? Dragosad.
Yeah,
he came on. And it was a back five. And they were proper battling in that, bro.
I was struggling,
this guy wants to go to Real Madrid and you're struggling against a guy that should be in flipping National League. Crazy. But anyway, yeah. But what was that even?
Exactly.
I was saying, yeah, obviously you guys have done like the most business in January, innit? So, again, I just think based on that, you're probably in the best position, I'd say, probably going forward. I think your squad, once Son comes back from the Asian Cup, obviously players coming back from injury, you should really have the edge against Villa.
Facts. And we have depth now.
Yeah.
Villa only 5 points off top right now, still.
Yeah, it's all tired.
This
prem
is nasty, man.
I just want to ask quickly, who's quicker out of Van de Ven and Saliba?
Van de Ven, man. Van de Ven's eating that guy.
He said Saliba's quicker than him.
Do you think he's got...
Who said that? Van de Ven said that.
But do you think he's got better acceleration? Because Saliba is quick, bro. Because yeah. I'll go back to that. I didn't know how quick Saliba was.
Van de Ven runs like Forrest Gump, bro. It's so like... I don't know how to explain it. The form is just like... Yeah. It's like he's... What's that guy from Rocky IV? The white guy.
He just runs
like a machine. Saliba's just there, like he's all gangly and that, but he's still quick in it. But I think off the eye, Van de Ven looked quicker in it. But
I think Van de Ven's acceleration is crazy. A centre back, I've not seen acceleration to his level. I do think Van de Ven's the quickest. Like, bro, there was a play against Everton, right, where Harrison was through on goal and the ground Van de Ven ate up, bro. I honestly, bro. Like I've never seen a centre back eat up grass like that, bro. That was nuts, bro. But Saliba's very quick as well. I'll go back to Saliba's foot race versus Nunes. That was brazy. I didn't like beating a striker as quick as Nunes in a foot race for a centre back is very commendable.
I'm a bit
it was quick.
Conscious of time, innit? But I want to ask you quickly,
AFCON.
As a rival fan, like so out of Spurs and Villa though, who do you think is gonna finish fourth?
I think Spurs will. I think
what's that based on?
I feel like they've got certain players, Van de Ven being one of them, Maddison being another, who are coming back that take them to a level which is above Villa. Maddison's a big boy game changer. Son is going to come back as well. They can hit a real nice one. They can win a lot of games.
I agree with you. The only thing that I'd say about Villa is recently, I know Emery's kind of come under criticism about kind of the defensive side of the game and how they set up away from home and whatever. Kind of see more now that he's started to play like Tielemans in the middle three. I think he's become a bit more pragmatic, probably seeing that they do have the possibility to finish in the top four, and he's starting to kind of adapt to that. So
yeah.
I don't think they're going to drop as many points in the second half of the season simply because of that. But obviously, he's Unai Emery. So when the pressure hits, you know, he's probably likely to go left. But then Spurs at the same time.
Yeah, facts.
Spurs are the same thing. So
yeah. Well, it's got to be tight. I just fancy Spurs because of the quality of those players I mentioned. You know, you got like Van de Ven, Madison, and Son in your side. These are
it's a good spine.
These are top draw players. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, we'll see. Quickly, man, just 5 minutes on AFCON. So there's kind of two key things I want to speak about. So Ivory Coast, right? Like, I feel like they might do the biggest recovery arc and like have one of the best stories that we've seen in an international tournament in a while. So obviously they were terrible in the group stages. Lost 4-0 in their last game to Equatorial Guinea. One of Equatorial Guinea or Guinea. I apologize. I can't remember which one.
I was about to say something.
They sacked their manager. I don't think they have a manager at the moment.
Yeah, it's Serge Aurier's player.
Serge Aurier's player manager.
Yeah.
Crazy. I thought that was just a rumor.
I can't lie. Is that not true?
No, it can't be.
He can't be.
The assistant became manager shortly.
Yeah, he was on the court. He was like,
okay, well, this is why you don't believe everything.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like it was. The player suggested it, but I feel like they said no. I think
of all people to give it to.
That's what I was thinking. So that would have made the story even better, innit?
Yeah. If he was doing, he'd never let us forget it. You already know about Serge Aurier.
Guy could get any girl in the Ivory Coast he wanted if they win that.
Bro, imagine you pull up to a judge. I was manager and captain. That's all on me. But in all honesty, they've got a good chance of winning now. It looks like, you know, they're obviously hosting the competition, so they've got that drive behind them. Like, what's our thoughts on what they're doing right now?
I think I watched the game against Mali. Is that they played against?
Mali. Yeah.
And yeah, man, it's just like the emotions, I think, are propelling them towards something that could be incredible. Honestly, because even if you look from a quality point of view, I know at the start of the tournament, they really struggled in their group, but a lot of people were like highlighting certain players in their team. You know, the midfield that they have, there's a few good players in there. If you look at it from that point of view, from a talent point of view, they are one of the best sides, isn't it? But I think based on what we've seen, it's hard to understand how they've got to this point. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's willpower.
But in the semi-final, when you get there, like we've seen in AFCON already, like the best teams haven't gone through. So, I mean, we're looking at it now. I actually think their biggest competitor is probably going to be Nigeria, mainly just because with Nige, I think the main thing is they haven't conceded goals, isn't it?
Yeah, very defensively resolute.
They have not conceded goals, and I just think Ivory Coast don't look like they're going to score a lot of goals as well. So I think if they were to come up against each other, I do think Nigeria have the upper hand. Ivory Coast, on the other hand, again, they're the host, isn't it? So you just never know what's going to happen.
So just before we move off Ivory Coast here, did you see like when they must have lost the game, and obviously like Mali were leading for a large amount of the game, and the manager's head top is fried, and his assistant's pork.
If you watch like when Ivory Coast scored their goal, because obviously they scored in that, like, I think it was 121st minute. He was about to bring a sub on for a penalty, innit? So he had his arm around him like this, and the goal went in, and for like 20 seconds they just had the camera on him, and he was just like this. The guy's literally looking at it, waiting for his instructions, and he just like, he was doing this for time.
You can see
it, and then at the end of the game, you just see like head's gone, and he's just sitting there, and I'm just thinking, did he tell him to like put the water on him, or was it just like a thing that they had,
was it just a agreement? I'm sure it was one of the most AFCON clips ever. You can literally see like his head steaming, and he's just pouring the cold water.
That is a generational meme.
It's almost like
sitting in the rain, and you're just sitting there just looking at the distance, and like, getting drenched. It's crazy, but it was hilarious.
Bro, his head was hot.
It was hilarious. But I think obviously AFCON now, this tournament has probably been, for me, obviously watching from the outside, I don't have a team that obviously has fun there, but this probably been one of the ones that's hooked me in the most. And that's weird, really, because like, I think if you look at it from a like an icon's point of view, obviously Salah went out early. Probably the best player left in the tournament probably would be Osimhen. Is that correct to say, or is there someone else that you think?
I think most on form, you still got like...
But you know, like before, obviously, you'd have like a Drogba.
Yeah.
What I'm saying? So from that point of view, you'd think that that would hook more of the people in. Obviously, with football Twitter the way it is now, I think the rivalries are really making people from the outside watch it as well. But it's been a good tournament, man. When I see some of the goals that have gone in, the quality of goals, bro, has been serious. If you were to make like a best 10 goals of the tournament, it'd be up there with anything.
There have been some great, great goals and just some great moments as well.
Has Osimhen scored it?
I think he scored one goal.
Silly goal where the keeper was doing foolishness.
He scored one or two goals.
So he'd be like your player of the tournament so far?
Well, obviously for me, it's Lookman.
Lookman, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like Lookman's been excellent. I was just going to say, we have... How's it left my mind, man? No, we don't have...
South Africa. The Mapiano derby.
That's jokes. Yeah. No, we've got Mapiano. But yeah, I feel like Lookman's been great for us, man. And I think it's nice to see... Obviously, Lookman's UK-born, UK-raised. It's nice to see, you know, a lot of these guys from Nigeria representing the country of their heritage and having great international careers. I mean, we had Moses like years ago, and he won us an AFCON representing us, even though he grew up in the UK. But I think he was actually born in Nigeria, so had like, I suppose, more ties. Lookman's UK-born, UK-raised, you know, and he could have a great tournament now. He could have a great story. And there's other players as well. There's Aynar. There's the lad who plays for Fulham.
Tossin.
It's not Tossin. It's the other one. Bassey.
Bassey.
So Bassey as well. And I think it's really good. And I always look at, you know, certain players who don't, like, getting to play for the country of your heritage should be something that's great anyway. And something that it should be hotly contested with the country that maybe you grew up in. But I see players that you're not really getting much of a look in internationally. And you kind of just stay there waiting to get the chance rather than represent where you're from.
I think obviously the other side of it as well is you look at those players that have kind of pledged their allegiance towards, you know, Niger at this time. I know you mentioned obviously Aynar. Obi's there, Lookman, Bassey. They're all actually G's from Enz.
Are they?
I know two of them. I know Bassey and Obi are good friends, but they all would have, you know, come across each other across the So I think obviously the chemistry has actually transferred over to the Nigerian team as well.
It's not
like, you know, sometimes when players come in from abroad, I feel like the worry is like, how are they going to settle into that?
Outside of the football, it's a big element.
Obviously, with Antonio coming into the Jamaican setup, it's like, it's quite random, isn't it? It's not really anyone that he's come with.
Tied to.
So I think that's also another thing. But I also think if Nigeria were to go on and win, and I already think they will have this impact anyway, but I think they should be able to go back to wherever it is that they're living right now, you know, and convince other people to it's almost like you're playing with your guys.
Yeah, exactly.
For your country,
you know, man. Yeah. So I hope they can convince the younger gen. My bro, Tomori, come in, man. Southgate's not going to appreciate it.
I think Chukwuemeka, guys like Madueke and that as well. Obviously, they can hold out for England, but might be wise for them to go.
After a little while, if you start getting to 23, 24, you may as well, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think obviously it's a good thing as well. World Cup is in 2026, isn't it? So it's actually a good time now to recruit them. Have like a 2-year period.
Exactly. As look at some players and you look at things, I'm trying to think if one comes to mind, but I remember Shola Amiobi in the day. He didn't start playing to Nigeria till he was like 30 and he was washed. And we were all cussing him because it's like, what's the point? And he waited his whole 20s waiting for an England call up. And like, you know, God bless Shola Amiobi, but bro, you were never playing for England. Like, that's just the fact. So come in your prime if it's not making sense. Do you know what I mean? Someone like Tomori, to be fair, I mentioned, he does have a good chance if Southgate is sacked, which he should be, in my opinion. But I'm sure there's a couple others. It's just not on the tip of like my tongue, but definitely, bro. Like, a man can't say tip of the tongue.
I'm sorry.
Is that where we are? I've got to pause that. Is that not crazy? That's a saying, like. Come on, man. Hey, the man, they were killing me out here, man. Hey, on that note, cut the show, man. Like and subscribe, my people. Like and subscribe, man. Oh,